Hello, and welcome to Making the Rounds, a podcast by the American Medical Association. Today's episode is part of our Health IT series from the AMA Medical Students Section, Committee on Health Information Technology. My name is Adrian Falco, and I am a medical student at the Texas Tech School of Medicine, and I'll be your host for today. We are delighted to introduce Dr. Garth Graham, Director and Global Head of Healthcare and Public Health Partnerships at UT. A cardiologist, researcher, and public health expert, Dr. Graham previously served in two U.S. administrations as Deputy Assistant Secretary at the United States Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Graham, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Finn.
And so for those who are not familiar with your work, could you give an overview of your involvements with Health IT, as well as any current projects you're working on?
Great question. So currently I'm at Google, and my role at Google is really to build up what we're doing around health and quality health information, particularly on YouTube. And so our goal is really, like I said, you know, to have folks that get quality health information, work with a variety of organizations across the country, and to use the scale of YouTube to help improve the quality of health information that people receive across the world.
Absolutely. And could you go into some of the specific projects that you're working on?
Yeah. There are a variety of different things we're working on. And probably summarize it by saying, you know, we have a couple of key partnerships with hospital system like Mass General Brigham and Mayo Clinic, Cleveland, and a number of hospitals across the country, where we're working with those hospitals to provide health content, quality health content on YouTube in general. One of the things we did earlier this year was, you know, try to define places where people could get quality health content across the board, and we work with the National Academies of Medicine to define the kind of institutions and organizations that could provide health quality content. And so we did that domestically in the United States, and we're working now to kind of scale that across the world globally. Today, as an example, just so happens that we are having this conversation today, but today we're doing a particular push with the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American College of Physicians, Children's Hospitals of Pennsylvania, around getting folks quality information around vaccines. You know, we've done a lot to tackle misinformation around vaccines on the platform, and now we're also trying to work to get people quality information around vaccines. So a number of kind of similar projects, but just to give you a flavor of the kinds of ways we're kind of thinking this through, you know, tackling misinformation, but also being proactive with providing health information at the same time.
Absolutely. Especially with all the information being put out into the world right now, it can definitely feel overwhelming and people may not know where to look. In regards to these public health initiatives that you have worked on, what have you found to work and not work?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think in healthcare that we need to do a better job of is engagement. You know, we need to do a good job of not just providing health information that is informative, but health information that's engaging so that people can relate to the information, understand it, and then hopefully act on it, you know, in general. And YouTube is a huge platform. You know, it reaches 2 billion people around the world in a month. That's about a third of the world's population. So really, you know, our ability to do this both not just in the U.S., but in Brazil, Japan, you know, across Europe, across Asia, requires, you know, understanding what's engaging. And so I think one of the things we've learned well and that we're working on and doing at scale is, you know, this idea of making health information engaging so that it's not just informative and evidence-based, but also engaging so that people understand. So that's one aspect. The other thing, I think, largely that, you know, I came from I did not come from tech originally in terms of my original background in this. And one of the things I've learned, and I think it's important for clinical audiences to learn, I came from a background both in cardiology, practicing research, and then the health insurance industry. And one of the things that is important for folks to understand is just how people are getting real in-time information. As clinicians, we tend to think of the clinical visit as a fulcrum of the distribution of health information. So that 15 minutes or, if you're lucky, half an hour. But truthfully, people are accessing information all the time around the world. They're doing it through their phones, they're doing it in real time. And, part of this effort is understanding how you get real-time information at scale. And working with so many different folks across the world to be able to do that. And we've had some really great activities, with NHS in the UK, with the CDC here in the US, and other kind of entities where, really our goal is, COVID has driven a lot of that, but even outside of COVID, get people real-time information so they make the right decisions.
I can imagine that can present with a lot of additional challenges, especially balancing freedom of speech and combating medical misinformation on YouTube. How do you work with that balance?
Yeah, that's an active process because, you certainly want to have folks, especially when you talk about health information, be able to talk about science, debate science, and where there's not clear areas of agreement, be able to discuss and educate people about science. But you also want to be careful about when that information crosses into harm. And so, where we really try to draw the boundaries where we get into information that may be harmful, may lead people to make a particularly harmful decision. So, that line is drawn, when it comes to increasing impact around harm. But it also illustrates, I think, the ongoing challenge I think we all face with information and information quality is you want to allow for debate, an engaging debate, and as you just mentioned, free speech, but you also want to be careful of when that information may lead to harmful decisions and harmful consequences.
Absolutely. And does YouTube take any measures in regards to that?
Yeah, so we have, and I'll use the vaccine discussion because I think that's pertinent to know, information that is misinformation, particularly on COVID, I think we've been working actively to remove that from the platform since around last year, especially, during the earlier stages of the pandemic. We just announced a couple of weeks ago, a vaccine misinformation policy where we're removing misinformation related to any vaccines in general. So whether that be flu vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella, all the cadre of vaccines that we know that have been helpful for some time. And then today, as I was alluding to, we also want to buttress that with providing users with information that may help them make decisions around vaccines in general, getting that from some of the partners I just mentioned, AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania, and American College of Physicians. So, really, you always want to, the strategy around tackling misinformation has to do with active removal when that information is, crosses into that subject around harm. But then you also want to supplement that with information that is comes from credible sources, but can educate folks so that they can make those right decisions in life.
Absolutely. And speaking about the people that you're working with, the plans to bring more knowledgeable creators, physicians, PhDs, PharmDs, and kind of bodies in healthcare. What is your vision for health content on YouTube in the future? What do you think it will look like?
Yeah, I think what we're working towards is just this concept of, bringing engaging health information from doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, PharmDs, lay people around who can give credible voices to the patient experience. Who understanding the journey that patients have been through and can create and have been creating emotionally engaging content, but also educational content. The vision is really to just continue expand that scale, scale that across the world. and have us be the primary place for credible but engaging health information. And again, you know, it's important to understand that just producing facts doesn't always lead to people believing it, because, you know, people come from their own cultural norms and backgrounds and have their own thoughts and beliefs. But, you know, engaging folks in a way in terms of sharing health information and being able to do that at scale is our overall vision and mission. And I like to say, you know, our goal is to make public health public. And the concept there is having people in so engaged in not just their own health, but community health and public health, that they understand how their decisions are important for them, but also for the community, and educating them with the information to be able to do that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's a really important message. I love the making public health public. And I know that you have had almost two decades of experience in this field and across multiple roles. What do you feel like is the impact of your work? And are there any challenges you experience that you wouldn't mind sharing?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have been in so many different parts of healthcare. But on the practice side, you know, I was in academics. I was chief of health services research at the in the Department of Medicine, University of Florida, and then I worked at Aetna. And then before coming to YouTube, I was chief community health officer at CVS, which allowed me to see a very different side of healthcare, you know, when it pertains to kind of retail settings. And then now being able to work in terms of what we're doing at YouTube with health information at scale. You know, I think for me, the challenge is I wake up every morning, and I've always been that way, even when I was a medical student. And I remember being just like you, an active part of the AMA, and, you know, engaging with my colleagues. You know, I think we all like to wake up and hope that our efforts are improving both, hopefully, the lives of people we interact with, but also where we can, impacting both our communities and the world in a positive way. I think for me, I've always wrestled with that and always tried to think through that and how decisions I make have ramifications. And hopefully, you know, when we're educating patients, when you're in that one-on-one, when you're seeing patients, you're thinking through, you know, making sure you're making the right decision for that patient, but also making sure you're making the right decision for communities in terms of other activities that I've done. And I think for me, the challenge has been balance. You know, quite frankly, I think, you know, that balance with wanting to make sure we're doing the right thing, with also making sure that, you know, we spend time balancing that with, you know, life, family, and all those other things that kind of rejuvenate us. And it's still a struggle. I have three little kids now, and it's important to me that I'm present in their lives as much as my parents were very present in mine. But I also realize that the roles and the jobs I have come with responsibility and being present there. But, you know, making sure that number one is always family. So I would say in that long soliloquy of an answer, I've constantly wrestled with balance and the ability to achieve balance in life. And I remember just like, you know, as you guys are doing now as medical students, it's an all-consuming aspect. With you're not studying, you're in class. You're not in class, you're worried about the next test and studying. And then you're worried about your career and you're worried about all these different things. So my heart goes out to you guys all the time because you're on a journey that is rewarding, but it's a challenge. And balance has been my challenge. Just, you know, ever since the earliest aspects of my career.
Yeah, thank you. And speaking for medical students, I think we can really, we can say that we really appreciate those words. And I also thought I'd ask, how often do your kids use YouTube?
Oh, man, you know, so our kids, we manage our kids' screen time in general. YouTube, for when they do have screen time, is very convenient because my kids are super picky about particular cartoons and particular Cocomelon is very popular in our house, but particular cartoon characters that they want to see and a specific episode that they want to see about those again and again. So YouTube is helpful for us because it allows us to drill down to that specificity you know, to find the specific, which can be frustrating at times, but that specific person that they want to listen to, in general. So in that end, and that's a good thing about YouTube. You know, it's a vast array of different, you know, options and, you know, and things, and that I think is what makes it attractive for you to ask questions. But also, you know, if you want to, again, watch Cocomelon, and, you know, give your kids an hour or so of that, then, you know, being able to do that. So that was before I got this job. but now seeing it from the inside, you know, just understanding how much people care about not just content, but quality, is important too.
Absolutely. And I'm actually on my pediatrics rotation, so I've seen Cocomelon more on the screens than I ever have in my life.
Listen. But I'm going to tell you, I live Coco. I mean, literally, I'm so engaged with Cocomelon. It's a part of my ever being. And my kids are, but that one's at 6 and 8. So they also, you know, Paw Patrol. And how did we get on this rabbit hole?
Yes. But bringing that back in, what your work on YouTube and getting that quality health information out there could maybe even influence what your kids see on YouTube.
Sure.
Although they might not be watching healthcare things at this moment, but exposure at some point.
Right. No, but I mean, the overall thing to just understand is, you know, so many patients, consumers, individuals who engage on YouTube have different life journeys, you know, and you want to be able to meet people where they're. And I think that's the benefits of a platform like that. I know I often say things like, you know, as a patient, you know, you may leave a doctor's office having heard something that may be challenging, a challenging diagnosis, a challenging piece of information, and you're going to search it, you're going to look for videos, you're going to try to find something to help inform your next decision when, as you engage with your provider. And that's where, you know, quality health information helps. If you wake up at 2 a.m. and you may not want to call your physician to 2 a.m. to answer that question, how can we as a platform provide those resources so that, you know, people get correct information and can engage your healthcare provider along with their healthcare journey?
I did want to ask, bringing it kind of back around, how has COVID affected your work?
Yeah, you know, I think like all of us, COVID has been definitional. I think certainly, you know, getting people accurate information about COVID across the world, you know, has been important. You know, we've done campaigns, not just in the US, but in the UK, Germany, France, you know, Japan, Brazil, you know, across the world, and just watching how the pandemic has evolved and tackling both proactive campaigns around health information, social distancing, and then vaccines, but also tackling misinformation, you know, across the world, has been just you know, an opportunity, but also a learning experience in terms of just understanding, as we all have learned during COVID, you know, how people get information, how they access information, and then how platforms like ours and others, including having clinicians present on the platform, has been particularly important. Early on, you know, there was a really interesting experience we had where we combined Dr. Fauci with the rapper Fat Joe. And it was an interesting art of public health, watching Dr. Fauci kind of engage and watching Fat Joe pull out the health information that he knew his audience needed. And at the end, you know, he asked, Fat Joe asked Dr. Fauci, he asked him, what's his favorite rapper? And Dr. Fauci actually had a really good answer. But what that was introducing a note of relatability so that the audience would then relate to the information even more. And I think that was an important lesson to understand. Again, just how you create engaging information about very important topics, in particular around COVID.
What do you think health IT will look like in 10 to 15 years? I know we had talked about the goals for YouTube, but what do you think it will look like overall?
Yeah, you know, I think increasingly, and COVID has done that, this idea of patient-centered care has been, it has been and will continue to accelerate. You know, patients want information. They want information to come to them in a way that is understandable and accessible for them. But as we've seen with telemedicine, you know, we're also understanding ways in which people can get care at home, and not every visit needs to be in person. And all of these things are just extension of clinical medicine into the patient's homes, their lives, in ways that we should have been there. So I often say, you know, like, you know, gone are the days of giving people flyers and they're looking for billboards to get their health information. Now people, they want to get in the palm of their hands. And that's a patient-centered way of accessing health information. And it goes along with all the other things we're started with seeing in general. So I think overall, over the next, you know, decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, we'll continue to see this idea of or this evolution. And the, I mean, we're talking about it in healthcare for such a long time, but now we're seeing it, where people want their lives to be the center of the healthcare system and the healthcare delivery and the way you get anything to them, services, information, et cetera. Not the opposite way around, where we've had a very kind of institutional-centric delivery model for healthcare. And now we have to think through the lives of patients more. And I think that's what we'll continue to see an evolution of in many aspects of healthcare. And I think our role in it is around information quality. But there's, you know, there's all these other aspects that I think just drive to the idea of patient-centered care in a very genuine way, as opposed to how we've thought about it before.
Thank you for sharing that. And finally, do you have any social media handles or other channels where people can connect with you and follow your work?
Yes, you know, I think you can all of our YouTube health announcements you'll see on our we do them through our YouTube blog. I promote them through, you know, LinkedIn and ways, you know, our professional social media. So I'm there for connection and outreach. And, you know, all of our, I think, all of this is just, different ways in which both we can connect professionally, but again, goes back to that bigger picture I was saying of how platforms and activities and these kinds of things are just ways in which I think we are just creating a network of people to share health information and share, their expertise in a variety of different ways.
Well, everyone, that's all for today. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your time today, Dr. Graham. This has been Making the Rounds, a podcast by the American Medical Association. You can subscribe to Making the Rounds and other great AMA podcasts wherever you listen to yours, or visit ama-assn.org/podcasts.